We are back once again. It's great to have you here for the 254th installment of the Parish of the Patriots, returning members of the congregation. It's great to see you here. If there's any new faces here, I'm glad to have you here. If you are new around here, we do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. I encourage you to stay and listen for it. Just if you're just your first time listening, don't be like, well, I ain't listening to any of that Jesus stuff. I don't know how to say it. The other members of the congregation can tell you it ain't what you think it is. You'll get something out of it. I highly encourage you, and I hope you'll stick around. Whatever's brought you here, I do appreciate you coming by. And we get passing the offering plate around. We get that done right at the beginning, and I do so now. Pass the plate around. If you do get something out of the show, please drop something in the plate. It's much appreciated. It makes a big difference for me. Both as a morale boost to know someone's getting something out of it, and just as a practical matter. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. If you want to do so, just look here on the description page. Just go down through the description and you'll see at the end. I've got a snail mail, got a Bitcoin address, got Monero address, got email down there. Drop your notes. Or if you have shit coins, I'll take those too. I'm not too proud to take your shit coins. Drop me an email. I'll get you an address for that. I will. I need to make a note. And I haven't mentioned this in a while. If you go to the very bottom of the page, there's a line that says something like we now accept donations at this Bitcoin address at the very, very bottom. That's Sven's address that he'd put up before he got sent away. And I mean, if you send something there, that's fine. He'll be able to get to that. I can't get to that. That's not my address. Look at the description. You'll see it right there. I've got it. It's highlighted in different colors and with the snail mail and all that is grouped up there together. But if you just jump to the bottom of the page, you're going to see that address of Sven's. Which, again, if you've sent Bitcoin to that address, that's fine. It'll be something waiting for Sven when he gets out. But I don't have any access to any of that. So I haven't mentioned that in a while, and I can see where that would get confusing for people. All of that having been said, that means it's time for the listener supporter mailbag, which quite frankly is not quite as sparse as it's been the last couple of weeks. No particular order. These are just stacked up. They're just stacked up as they are. So no particular order here. Let's see what we got. GPD, thank you again for doing God's work. I learn something every time I listen. Do you have any updates on Sven that you can share? And that's from Mr. T. Not really. I mean, I have been in contact with him. And I mentioned this here a while back, and I don't remember which show exactly. But you know, his restrictions that he had been placed under, you know, he's been moved to this other facility. We've got all that. I've been putting that information up on all of the Daily Nationalist shows. I don't put Sven's support info on this show or on the Orthodox Nationalist show because, quite frankly, it gets too cluttered with too much information there. But it does go up on every one of the Daily Nationalist shows. As most of you, I'm sure all of you pretty much know, he got moved to a different facility. He was under some restrictions there for a while. Those have all been lifted. So you drop him a note, drop him a letter. Don't try to be clever. I recommend people stay away from politics, you know, writing to him about politics. And if you are, be very vague and very general about it. I mean, it's fine if you write that, you know, the political situation in the West continues to be a shit show. That's fine. But I wouldn't get into specific political topics. You do you. You'll go. Y'all free to do what you want to do. But I'm just telling you, I mean, he is in Britain. Obviously, all his mail's read. That's for everybody that's in prison. And, you know, for instance, in Britain, anything that you write that says something positive, for instance, or portrays Hamas in a positive fashion, they're deeming that terrorists, you know. So it's not going to go through. Just stick with the mundanes, you know, stick with normal topics. It means a lot. Somebody that's locked up, you may think nobody cares. You know, this is boring. He doesn't care about that. But for somebody that's locked up, that's an important thing. So I encourage you to just stick with those kind of topics. But again, you do you. As I have been in regular contact. He's doing fine as far as what he is telling me. Through correspondence. I use the email service. I think that is the easiest, especially if you're international. It's still slow because they have a certain amount of backup and they have to read through these. I feel sorry for whoever has to sit there and read. I sometimes try to put stuff in there that's funny that I think whoever works at the prison has to read this stuff will come across that and start chuckling and laughing. You know, they'll find something funny about that. But I find that it's cheap and yeah, it's slow, but it ain't as slow as international snail mail. I use that. It's funny because, you know, I was talking about the mundane and Sven had told me here just in a recent email, he's like, I found it. He basically said he found it entertaining and funny when I'd send him an email at some point in time talking about anime. He's like, I don't care about, just send me some anime reviews. He found that entertaining. He's like, you asked for it, brother. You got me started on a topic like anime reviews. You're getting anime reviews. But no, he is doing well. He's in good spirits. His restrictions have been lifted. Things are kind of, as far as back to normal as you can be when you're in prison, they are so. And as obviously, we continue to hope to see him released soon. Let's see what else we got here. Dan, sorry I'm a little late. Had some back problems and was just getting some relief. I got a bad cold now, but I'm doing better today. My tax preparer told me federal taxes are going up 7%. Now I know why they hired extra agents. I already have extra money taken out of my pay for taxes. I may have to drop my health care. My health care at work to keep up next year. Yahweh bless you. And that's from Tony. It is that time of the year. I always regret, like most people, those of us here in the U.S., the first quarter of the year is always bumpy. Here, I mean, in Texas, we don't have a state income tax. That's a blessing. We do have property tax, though. That's how they fund them. So one of the main ways they fund everything is property tax. And if you own any property, you got to pay this property tax. And that property tax is due by the last day of January. So January comes, I got property tax to sell. And of course, like you say, you got this whole federal income tax nonsense. Now, I'm poor. So I usually, as a general rule, I don't get dinged too hard on it, but it's still, it's a mountain of paperwork. It's a huge, huge pain in the ass. It costs money just to have my taxes done. It does. I hate it. And meanwhile, we have to make choices about, can we continue to afford health care or not? My health care is through that government, what everybody calls Obamacare, but it's, the actual insurance is through a major insurance company, and it's crap insurance, and the government pays him. All it is a payoff for the insurance companies. Government pays this ridiculous premium every month on my behalf in the form of a tax credit, and it's one of those things, the tax credit. You either get the tax credit by giving it to the insurance company, or you just don't get it at all. It's not like, well, if you don't sign up for Obamacare, that $600-$700, whatever it is a month that they pay the insurance company, you get that instead. No, that isn't the case. You just don't get it at all. Since I basically live on nothing, I get this tax credit to cover this shit, but it's crap insurance. You say, well, you don't sound very great, but look, my insurance doesn't pay anything until I hit the deductible. Which roughly, because it varies a little bit every year, the plan, it varies a little bit, but it usually winds up being somewhere around $8,000. I have to pay $8,000 out of my pocket to cover, before the insurance ever pays a dime. Now, if you're a regular person, not like me, if you're a regular person and you're just covering doctor visits, you go to the doctor's office and you the doctor. I don't give a shit about that. I never cared about it. I went for years and years without any health insurance. And if I had to go to the doctor, I just paid for it. It isn't that big a deal. Cheaper than paying for the insurance. But I have to get these stupid cancer scans. I'll get into that here a little more. But I'd get these stupid cancer scans, and they cost roughly around $3,000, $3,000 to $3,500 a pop. And these assholes want me to take this scan like 3 or 4 times a year. I'm not, because I don't have that kind of money. I can't pay for it. And the insurance covers nothing. That's how it is. Totally the way to run a first world country. Absolutely. Happy New Year. Happy New Year in Clown World. Once again, modern Israel is not the Old Testament Israel. They are two different animals. That's from Triangle Whip. You said it, brother. I can't. I told you, where's about? Y'all know I'm like a broken record. There's just such a childish, simplistic, silly notion. The modern nation state of Israel is Israel the Bible. It's got to be. It's got the same name. I It just boggles my mind. Grand Junction. I'm just saying Grand Junction. That's where it looks like this came from. There's no note or anything, no name on here, but I did want to let you know it came, and I do very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And finally, I'm at the end of the listener supporter mailbag. Grandpa Dan, thanks for everything you do for our people. I'm a huge fan of you and Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, as well as Sven. I pray all the time for you guys, especially for Sven, hoping he's released soon. I consider myself a good Catholic and never found anything you say to be contradictory to my faith, I know, in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has been under attack for a long time now, as all our institutions have been. Well, I just wanted to say thanks again and hope to be contributing regularly since I'm starting a new job soon. Keep the faith. And that's from Charles. Thank you very much, Charles. Thank you for your prayers. It means a lot to all of us. I really, people say that, you know, and they don't mean, I mean it. I don't know how to convince y'all. I mean it. You know, to hear your words and for your prayers and your support in every way, it means a lot. It means a lot to me that y'all decide to tune in, you get something out of it, to hear that you're getting something out of it. Again, I don't know how to convey my sincerity in that, because people, we're just so used to people saying things they don't mean. You know, like when something tragedy happens and all these people come out and it's something tragic that happens to someone they don't know. And they're like, oh, my heart is broken. My thoughts and prayers. But they're not actually praying for that person, and they're not actually heartbroken. They don't even know that, people. We're so used to this lack of sincerity in our world that we kind of assume it from everybody. And I can tell you with all sincerity, it really does mean a lot to me. I do. I appreciate it. I'm sure Dr. Johnson does, as well as Sven, for sure. And yeah, no, hopefully you won't find anything that runs contrary to your traditional Catholic faith. I listen. One of the things I enjoy, I mean, what we do in our Christian specific segment here, I mean, this is by and large, I'm sure I've said this before, but the things I talk about on the Christian specific segment are things that I've just come to my own knowledge and understanding in daily prayer and reading the Bible and seeking God and seeking His wisdom. And it's really something to me when, for instance, I might listen to one of Dr. Johnson's shows, Orthodox Nationalist shows, and he's talking about some saint I'd never heard of from the 1500s. From the 1500s or something. And he will talk about the, you know, one of the things that this saint in the 1500s came up with in his view on some topic. And, you know, this is a part of the Orthodox Church view. And it'll basically, for the most part, wind up when I hear this, and it lines up with what I've come to understand and knowledge. And I really just consider that as like a confirmation that, yes, I'm on the right track. And I think the same thing will apply to when you hear something, we discuss it here, and you look at your traditional Catholic faith, and it says, yes, this lines up with what has traditionally been taught in the Catholic Church or the Orthodox Church all these, you know, for centuries now. And we're not talking about that thing you have up there as a quote-unquote pope right now. And I know, you know, we're talking about your tradition, what's always been taught in the church, whether it's Catholic Church or the Orthodox Church or whatever. Those things line up. That is a confirmation. Yes, I'm on the right track. If I thought I understood something and you know, I listened and it's like, well, that topic was covered by this saint or something, and he had a completely different view, I'd have to stop everything and go, maybe I misunderstood something. Maybe I was incorrect. But anyway, I do appreciate it. We got to keep on rolling. That gets us through the listener supporter mailbag. One of my personal favorite parts of the show, because it's like a back and forth. It's really cool. We're going to keep on rolling. I hadn't talked about the cancer thing in a while, and I wanted to bring you up to date on that. So far, so good. I continue to have to do these scans. I mentioned that kind of in passing, talking about the cost. The cost. Oy vey, the cost. You just wouldn't believe the cost of these scans. It is. It's like a Holocaust for my budget, only very real. But everything's good. Everything's good. I have one thing, and I've mentioned this before. One thing about the COVID the whole COVID fiasco and the way it was handled. I don't mean just by the government, but I mean by the healthcare profession in general. Really, I've gained a whole different perspective on the healthcare industry. And I like that term because that's exactly what it is. It is an industry. I read somewhere, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I know it was in the billions. Cancer treatment is a billions of dollars per year. And like I say, I don't remember the number, and I don't want to stop recording to go look it up. It's over $1 billion a year industry in treating cancer. They're never going to find a cure. They're never going to find the cause so as to permanently prevent it. That costs them money. It is the healthcare industry. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and say you never need to go to the doctor, because that would be a lie. It would be hypocritical of me, because I go to the doctor. I go to the oncologist. I do these things. But I do them with an entirely different perspective. I'm the type of patient that doctors either really like me or they really hate me. Now, what I've noticed through the year, because, see, I take an active role. I take the role that this decision is mine, not the doctor's. See, most people want to pawn the decision off on the doctor. They don't want to take responsibility. That way, if it goes bad, they can blame the doctor for it. I don't. I make the decisions. Am I doing this? Am I not doing this? I said this when I faced the first cancer surgery. You know, I told everybody around me, I said, you know, I'm not at the point of having to make that decision now, but if the topic of chemotherapy comes up, that's going to be a tough topic to cover, because I don't see myself doing that. I mean, I just don't. But I take an active role. I view that it is my decision. In other words, I'm the one in charge here. It's my body. It's my health. It's my life. Not this asshole in a white coat. You know, again, not belittling doctors. Now, what I've noticed through the years, because I've had that attitude for a long time, and what decades ago, doctors like actually would get excited and appreciate this, because you know, you're not putting everything off on them. If they come to you and say, well, you need to do this, that, and whatever, you know, and I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to do that. Or you would ask them, okay, wait a minute, what does that mean? What does this entail? What are you actually talking about doing? And a lot of times they would actually appreciate this. It's like, oh, it's a patient that's just not going to sit there like a bag of sand and you know, want me to make their decisions for them. Now, what I've noticed is over the years, I've gone from that reaction to now it seems like doctors kind of resent that. Like, you dare to question my holy, don't you see? I have my holy robes on. I have my white coat. I am the clergy of the healthcare industry. It's an industry. I'm not saying that your doctor may not have, you know, be trying to do his best for you, not running it down, but you do. I think it's really important. This is the perspective I have gained between my cancer stuff I've gone through, two cancer surgeries over the years, and with what we went through during the whole COVID nonsense. I really understand now it is a healthcare industry. It is an industry. It's no different than if you take your car to the mechanic shop, he's not going to fix it for free. If you sit there and say, well, I don't have any money, but I really need my car fixed so I can get to work. Can you go ahead and fix my car? He don't give a shit if you walk to work. You go to your doctor and he says, we can save you with these treatments, but it's going to cost you this much money. You're like, I don't have this much money. He's going to let you die. That's how it works here in the U.S. A listener talking earlier about worried about their health insurance. They may not be able to afford it. People in another country may be like, well, I don't understand why that's even a big deal, because they would literally let you die because it is a healthcare industry. I have noticed over the decades, doctors have gone from being concerned so much about treating you to being concerned about what they can write you a prescription for. I don't go to the doctor for quote-unquote checkups. To me, that's like taking your car that's running perfectly fine, dropping off at the mechanic shop and saying, just give it a look over and see if anything's wrong with it. I guarantee they're going to find something wrong with it, because that's what they're getting paid for. You're asking them to take their time to go over your car. Time is money for them. It's an industry. Never understood how people could, though their mechanic can come to them and say, well, your car, the transmission's going out. You're going to need a new transmission. And and people will be skeptical and they'll be like, hold up now. I didn't think there was that much wrong with this car. Now you tell me it's going to cost me $5,000 because I need a transmission. I'm going to go get a second opinion. I'm not so sure about this. And yet they go to their doctor. And because he wears the holy white robes, they'll just take everything he says. This is gospel truth. I never understood that mindset. It's an industry. I'm one of those people, I don't go to the doctor for checkups. That's like going to the mechanic and saying, see if you can find something wrong with the car. They're going to find something wrong. The doctor is going to find a prescription they can write for you. One shape, form, or another, they're going to find something to write your prescription for. We have these pharmaceutical ads here in the U.S. And some of the stuff they're claiming to be treating for, I didn't even know it existed. I seen one time, I always make references because I always find it so funny. It was something like twitchy leg syndrome. Do you have a problem with your leg twitching when you lay down at night? Well, yeah, my leg does do that. My leg will twitch sometimes depending on what I've done all day. I never thought I needed to go get a prescription for it, but apparently I did. Twitchy leg syndrome. A lot of y'all may not be old enough, but it used to be against the law for them to advertise. They used to not be able to advertise pharmaceutical products, you know, drugs, chemicals to put into your body. It used to not be allowed. That used to be against the law. It was in the late 90s. I think it was under Clinton. They changed the law so they could start advertising drugs on TV. Now, you got pharmaceutical commercials are the norm. You get that all the time. They sell prescriptions and they sell treatments. They really did. They're not going to cure cancer ever. There's no financial incentive. Some of this perspective came from the COVID thing. When we came to understand, anybody that was paying attention came to understand that the way these drug approvals work is basically you have this revolving door with FDA officials and they work for the pharmaceutical companies for a while and then they work for the FDA and they're just rubber stamping this stuff. They present their research and the FDA doesn't replicate their research. They just look out and, oh, they wouldn't lie, stamp off on it, sign off on it. Very skeptical. Your doctor, and again, this doesn't necessarily mean like your doctor is being like, you know, I don't know. He isn't more or less treating you, but you have to understand what I've come to understand is these doctors simply follow the protocol. You know, that this is what you do. It's if you picture like a flow chart or maybe like, you know how like if you call some company for technical support, like you're having computer problems and you call and 99.99% of the time you're getting redirected to India and and it's so annoying because you sit there, they you call your internet company, your internet's gone down and you call them up and you get forwarded obviously to India every single time. And you know it's India. There ain't no question. Because A, they got the accent, and B, they always have fake ass white people names. Thank you for calling tech support. My name is Mary. How may I help with your problem today? Well, Mary, let me tell you, Mary, my internet is down. I've reset the router. I've rebooted, you know, the power pack. I've tried everything on my end. And I still have no internet, Mary. I have this problem. Thank you very much. I'd be thankful very much to help you with your problem. We are going to begin by rebooting the router. No, Mary, I just told you I've rebooted the router 3 freaking times. We can skip this step. We must reboot the router. This is the first part in diagnosing your problem properly. We must reboot the router. Mary, I've rebooted the router. We're not going to accomplish anything with rebooting the router. And on it goes, because they're reading a script, you know, they're following the protocol. See, your doctor, if you have to go see, for instance, just to use my example, you seeing an oncologist, understand it's not that they're not trying to do what's, but you know, to treat you per se, it's just that they're following the protocol and the protocol is set by the pharmaceutical companies that are selling treatments and making billions of dollars a year. And your doctor thinks he may very well, he probably does, think he's doing what is best because this is the protocol. We understand that people that go to college are taught what to think. They're scored on how well they can regurgitate, repeat back what they're told by the professors, not on critical thinking. Everybody knows this. You know this. I know y'all aren't stupid. You understand this. How much more so do you think the medical profession works? They are trained to follow the protocol. They're basically like Mary, who is following a script in India. On your problem, she doesn't care that you've rebooted the router already. This is step one. We have to follow the protocol. And you understand that the healthcare industry works the same damn way. Your doctor is not that they're not interested in treating you, but all they understand is to follow the protocol. The protocol says we have got to do this. This is the next step. And the protocol is written by these corporations who make billions of dollars off of dragging this out and charging you money off of the healthcare industry, be it the pharmaceutical companies or the hospitals or these groups. And they're all owned now by these big corporate conglomerates. They're making money off of the protocol, and they're the ones that write the protocol. And I'm telling you, profit is the motivation here, not treating you. Your doctor got to look at you. He's a human being, and he probably does want to treat you the best way he can. But he's also just been trained that the way to do that is to follow the protocol. Don't vary from the protocol. This way, they'll now like be offended if you want to vary off the protocol. You're like, well, I'm not going to do that. And they're like, you have to reboot the router. You have to reboot the router. No, doc, I'm not rebooting the router. I'm not going to do that treatment. I don't think that's in my best interest. The protocol, hear me now, the protocol is written by these corporations that are profiting from you having cancer. With my first cancer, which was the melanoma, they told me there was roughly, it's been several years now, but immediately after the surgery, they told me there was a roughly 30% chance that it could return. And the problem is if it returns, it doesn't return on your skin. It returns spread out in your organs, and it's extremely hyper-aggressive, and you're probably going to die. Now, part of the protocol is, well, first they tried to sell me, and I've talked about it before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. They tried to sell me on this expensive immunotherapy that could supposedly reduce the 30% chance. I looked at the side effects and I'm like, I'll roll the dice. But they want you to take these scans, which I do. You got to take these scans. Now, the protocol is I'm supposed to take these scans, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a year. I don't know. It's supposed to taper off and become less as the years go by. But it's like 3 or 4 times a year. This past year, 2023, I did it twice. Again, as I already talked about whining about the insurance, this cost me over $3,000 out of my pocket. I don't have that kind of money. I just don't. They wound up letting me pay it out. But I mean, I can't compound that. I literally do not have the money to do that. I'm not whining. It just is what it is. Most of you don't have the money either. So I did it twice. And towards the end of the year, after the last one, I went to the oncologist and he was a little miffed with me. He's like, well, you've only done the scans twice. You're way overdue. You went way longer. You were supposed to be doing this, I think it was every 3 months. And it's been 6 months or whatever it was. And I told him flat, I said, well, I don't have the money. And he's like, well, I know it's very financially difficult, but this is your health we're talking about. This is your life. We're talking about they try to scaremonger you into it. But I was thinking this, actually, I was reflecting on this. This is what got me started on this thought about the protocol and who writes the protocol. Now, when you go in for these scans, before they put you in the machine, before they put you in the MRI type machine there, they take you in this little room and they inject this shit into you so that the machine can read all of this. Now, they're not injecting you with food coloring. They're using this stuff. It's encased in a steel syringe. And when you walk in there, they open up this box that's like a thick-walled vault. And they open up the vault. And the guy pulls out this syringe that's encased in like stainless steel. Because whatever's in there, they don't want to be getting it on them through the air. Yes, I understand. It's radioactive. I get that. But I was reflecting on the fact that it's in this syringe encased in steel because they don't want to be affected by it. And they inject that crap directly into your veins. They put it in you and you circulate that radiation around, this chemical, this radiated chemical around in your body so that they can do the scan. Now, these same people will tell you that radiation causes cancer. And then they'll turn around and say, well, this is a low enough dosage. You fine. Get it multiple times a year through this steel encased syringe so that the guy who's just in the same room with you, he don't get cancer. But don't worry, it's fine for you to put it directly into your veins. And this got me thinking, you know, how much of the 30% return? Because like with mine, my first surgery, the second was kidney cancer, but I'm just kind of staying on the first surgery, because this is the one that they make you do the scans for. And the 30%, they do a surgery and they cut it out. Now, if they don't get it all, it spreads around in your body and you're pretty much foobarred. But now I've been on several years since this transpired. I think it's pretty safe to say they got it all. I was very blessed that the surgeon who did this, which I had to search high and low for to find one that took my shit insurance, he did a very good job. Looked like hell after he did it, but he was very thorough. He cut deep. I've got a huge section mission. I look like some kind of scarecrow or some shit. He got it all. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say he got it all. If he didn't, we would know by now. It would have turned up by now. You scatter cancer cells around in your bloodstream, it's going to pop up. It's going to be blooming like crazy. And yet the protocol says I'm supposed to do these scans for like 5 years. Now, I got to thinking the other day, you know, about this stuff they put in you, and you start thinking, you know, okay, I'm sure out of the 30%, they laid out this 30% number to me of people that it comes back in. Okay, out of that 30%, what percentage is because the surgeon missed some of it? I'm sure there's a certain percentage of that the surgeon, he screwed up, he didn't go deep enough, and it spread through the system. There's a certain percentage of that. But why would it simply then, if they got all of it, why would it quote unquote come back? If you cut it all out and it hadn't spread before they got in there, then how does it quote unquote come back? Where is it coming from? And I started considering the effects that the protocol could have. The effects of injecting yourself with this radioactive dye that has to be kept in a vault. What percentage of people, you see, 30% is such a handy number because it's a believable number. If they did the process and you went in your first visit afterwards and the oncologist said, well, you got an 85% chance it's going to come back and kill you, you'd be like, what the hell have I even done all this for? You see, you question the protocol. But 30%, that's a nice, round, fairly low number. And you like, you know, if it comes back, if you're rocking along 3 years later, well, it's back. The cancer doesn't come back. You'd be like, man, I was the one of the 30%. And never stop to consider, maybe this whole thing of multiple times a year injecting me with this crap that has to be kept in a vault, and while the guy's handling it, it's in a stainless steel encased syringe that looks like it came out of the 1800s. Maybe, just maybe, that might have something to do with the fact now that, voila, you've got cancer again, but don't worry. We got a protocol for that. We've got treatments. They're not cheap, but buddy, we have got treatments. Now, people shake their heads. True believers shake their heads and say, they wouldn't. Yes, they would. We know this. They injected millions of people with this quote unquote vaccine that we know is not a good thing. As I said the other day on one of the shows, there ain't nobody. And nobody who refused to take the vaccine is sitting around today going, man, I wish I would have took that. But there are the number of people who did take it that are now like, I wish I wouldn't have done that is not zero. The number of people who didn't take the vaccine that regret it is literally zero. We know we have the benefit of hindsight to see and look and say, this is an industry. They made a lot of money off of this. There's no reason it wouldn't apply to these other areas. It's like people will sit around, like normies will sit around, especially normie conservatives. They'll sit around and bitch and moan about how corrupt and awful and inefficient and terrible the government is. But yet then when it comes to the military, they get down and bow down and, oh, our hero. No, the military is the one part of the government, like it's immune. Like, it's immune from all of the other failings that the rest of the government, they admit, is ate up with, infested with. But somehow this one part of the government isn't. This one part of the government is holy and righteous or something. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. Same thing with the healthcare. You know, the whole mRNA vaccine fiasco. Why wouldn't it apply to the rest of the protocol? Why didn't it apply to the rest of the industry? If the whole vaccine COVID thing was about making money, why isn't the rest of it? And you got to make the point of this. We got to wrap up. We got to get into the Christian specifics. I know the show is going to wind up going long, but the whole thing is, look, you, what it comes down to is you got to make your own decisions. Take charge. If you got to deal with this industry, understand it for what it is. I'm not saying just never go to the doctor, although that's kind of been the way I've lived most of my life. But when you interact with the healthcare industry, understand it is an industry and they're there to make money. Again, it doesn't mean your doctor that you're seeing isn't personally trying to do the best he can. He's going to follow the protocol. The protocol was written by the corporations who only care about making money off of you. They don't care if you live. They don't care if you die. They don't care if you're sick and suffering. If you being sick and suffering means they're going to make an extra, you know, $1 million a year, whatever, they'll do that. They don't give a shit about your sick and suffering. The point is, you're responsible. It's your life. Don't ever be afraid to tell these people, no, I'm not doing that shit. I'm not. Me, myself, I've decided that regardless of what they say, I'm going to do the scan. I'm doing it once this year. I did it twice last year. He got mad at me because I was supposed to do it 3 or 4 times last year. Well, I'm going to do it once this year. I'm going to do it one time this year. I made the point back when he complained that I'd gone long without doing the scan. And I talked about the money, and I walked out of there and I was thinking, you know, the latest scan came back just fine. So really, I accomplished saving myself $3,000. I mean, he can whine about what I need to do, but the last scan came back fine. So you got to make your own decision. I mean, you know, and I've just sat here and talked about being a little bit leery of this crap they're injecting in you. But I'm going to do the scan because I'm making my own decision. My decision is I'm going to do it once this year. I'm going to hit it right about summertime is what I'm thinking. I'm going to hit it right about the middle of the year. I'm going to do the damn scan and go from there. But this multiple times a year being injected with this radioactive crap, I don't think that's a good idea. I'm not going to do it. Now, he's going to whine. He's going to whine and tell me about I need to be following the protocol and this is what we do. But I'm going to knock that down to about once. That's what I'm going to do. For one thing, I don't have damn money. I can't. You know, I did it twice last year, and I'm still trying to pay this shit off. I'm anyway, y'all don't care about that. That's my personal issues I got to work with. But I can't afford it, for one thing. But even that aside, setting that aside, because it really has nothing to do with what we're talking about here, I've just decided I've made my own decision. Look, I've gone several years now. Obviously, the surgeon got it all. It would be back by now if it was spread out through my system. Now I'm more leery of this crap they're injecting me to stick me in that machine. I'm more leery of that than I am that somehow it's magically going to, quote unquote, come back, like just teleport itself back around inside my body. I'm leery. I'm leery of that. So I'm making my decision. And that's the whole point as we wrap up here. Whenever you have to deal with this industry, never forget it's an industry. You make your decisions. You're the one responsible, not him. He's doing follow his protocol. It's your decision. You got to look at it. You got to do your own research. Look at the side effects of what they're wanting to do. Be very, very skeptical of any prescriptions they want to write for you. Question and make your own decision. I'm not telling you the decision should be no, I'm not doing that. I'm not telling you the decision is to blindly follow them. Make your own decision. Be informed and take responsibility for it. Make that decision. Right, wrong, in between. And you'll do better. You'll feel empowered. You won't feel helpless going through the process while you blindly follow the protocol. We got to get into the Christian specifics. I know the show is going to go long. I'm having a sulky moment. Maybe not. But I know the show is going to be long. So we're going to go on in here. Again, if you're new here, stick around for this. You'll enjoy it. I think you will. Anyway, Regular listeners, y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. At some point in time, you've probably heard the saying, some people have to learn things the hard way. Maybe you recognize that in other people, and quite likely you've seen that in yourself. I, as a little self-confession, I feel like I'm the type of person, so I look back at my life, and it's like most all of the important things I have had to learn over the years, I've had to learn the hard way. You know, people, when they get up in age, they'll reflect on their youth, and you talk to somebody who's older, and, you know, a lot of times they'll reminisce and say, oh, if I could just only go back, you know, if I could only go back and be young again. I'm not one of those people. I'm not, because my reaction, which will oftentimes raise a few eyebrows when I'm an IRL company, is there's no way I want to go back and have to relearn all those lessons all over again. I mean, I suppose perhaps if you could go back and carry your current knowledge with you, but that's, you know, all of it's just a silly mental exercise, I suppose. But the idea that if you could just only go back and grasp your youth once again, it would just be so wonderful. But the truth of the matter is, obviously, we only get one trip around on this rock, and, you know, going back would mean relearning those lessons on some form or another. We think that if we could just go back and carry our current knowledge, then we'd take a whole different path. But yet, to go back to your youth would mean to return once again to the temptations that are inherent in youth, to the physical passions that are inherent in youth, to deal with the things that you have to overcome, things that are actually spawned on by your own natural desires. And having to face those once again when you've already been blessed with overcoming them. I think some of this is due to the fact that our society values youth over age and wisdom. See, the traditional way to look at these things is age and wisdom, understanding that those who have lived longer have accumulated more knowledge and no wisdom, and this was respected. But it isn't anymore. Now what is honored, what is held up in high esteem in this broken and wicked society is youth. You know, youth, and the idea of living in the moment. You know, you only live once. Well, that's true. But instead of looking at that saying with the notion in mind that you better get it as right as you can because you only live once, it's promoted in this society as, well, you only live once, live in the moment. Grab everything you can. Seek all of the earthly pleasures that you can. And, of course, with what this society promotes as earthly pleasures is sin, which, of course, is a lie because there is no pleasure in sin. It may seem pleasurable, but it always only leads to suffering and death, ultimately, and self-loathing. There's all these negatives attached to this, and I believe we've talked about that before. But learning things the hard way, you know, you have to experience them. And I think this really applies to most everybody. I think it certainly applies to us as Christian believers. If you reflect back on your life, I was reflecting back on my life the other day. And as you reflect back on your life and you look at where you are now, not, you know, we tend to do that, and we tend to just look at the negative things, you know, how we're coming up short, how we're not where I wish I would have been. You know, again, we look back, and when we were a teenager, we thought by the time we were in our 50s, why, you know, we would be rich and have this and that, and our lives would just be this, you know, imaginary, wonderful thing, which, of course, it's never going to be. That's a lie. But when you look back on your life, you know, and you even look at the positive things, you know, where you're at now, how satisfied are you in your life? The things that you have gotten right and the lessons that you have learned, most importantly, the lessons that you have learned in the Lord. When you look at these things, virtually all of them, it seems, or at least for me, and I believe this applies to pretty much everybody, they came, you had to learn those things, you had to get there the hard way. You had, in other words, you attain to those things, you attain to that knowledge and that fragment of wisdom, you attained that through suffering. And obviously, nobody likes the idea of suffering, certainly not me. But the reality is the real things, the real experience points we gain in life that really move us forward to a different stage in our lives, those things ultimately, it seems to more often than not, we acquire those things through suffering. Just as a primitive example, a person, say, for example, you have a person who has lived their life learning to do with very little. They have suffered. They've suffered under the weight of poverty, under the weight of having to learn to do without, having the weight of having to learn to make do with very little. And on the other hand, you have a person who has lived their life in luxury, never having to worry about having enough money or learning to do without. They always had plenty. Now, in the situation of an economic and societal collapse, which one of those two people is going to be better prepared for? Sure, when times are good, everybody looks jealously at the person who has plenty and says, wow, that guy, he's the one that's living life correctly. But if all goes over the cliff, all of a sudden, the person whose life actually doesn't even change that much, the person who is able to figure out how to pick up and carry on, because it's not that far they have fallen. See, they're used to doing without. They've spent many years learning to make do with very little, to get by. They're ready. They're the ones who have built up experience points that are going to carry them forward. However, the man who has spent his life in luxury, who has spent his life with plenty, who has no idea how to do without, he is going to be ill-prepared for the calamity that has come. You see, the person who's done without has suffered. And through his suffering, he is now in a place where he's able to carry on. And now, as things have gone off the cliff, this person is prepared. You see, he has wisdom. In that age, that man has wisdom, and he has gained that wisdom from suffering. He has gained that experience from suffering. Now, again, obviously, nobody likes suffering. Certainly not me, and I'm sure you don't either. But it's something worth bearing in mind if perhaps you yourself are going through a rough patch, or maybe you are suffering, and things seem pretty dismal in your life and pretty dark, and it's hard to find any sort of light at the end of the tunnel. Understand this. As long as you keep moving forward, you're gaining experience. You may not see a light at the end of the tunnel, but you will come out of the end of the tunnel. Believe me, I've been through a lot of tunnels in my life, probably more than many of you. As long as you keep moving forward, you will eventually find a light at the end until you will come out of that tunnel. And I can also assure you that you will come out of that tunnel with new wisdom, with new maturity, especially as you face these trials and this suffering with your eyes towards the Lord, with seeking the Lord, seeking His wisdom, seeking His grace, approaching Him with humility. You will find the end of the tunnel and you will come out of it with more wisdom. You will come out of it with more understanding, and hopefully you will come out of it with a greater understanding and knowledge of the Lord, which is what truly profits us, for that stays with us after we leave this life. I'm always reminded in times of suffering, or when I'm talking about or reflecting on times of suffering, I'm always reminded of what we're told in the New Testament, where it is written, where you'd have the believers and they would get rounded up and thrown into prison for speaking the truth in Jesus Christ. They'd get rounded up and thrown into prison, and they would sing psalms of praise to God. They would praise God that they were found worthy to suffer for the name of Jesus Christ. They weren't suffering for sin. They weren't suffering as a result of their poor decisions. And this will get into here in just a moment, hopefully, the different kinds of suffering. They praised God because they were found worthy of suffering for the sake of His name. Imagine being able to have that kind. Now, they were suffering. They were nothing pleasurable about being thrown in some ancient prison, some ancient dungeon somewhere. And yet they praised God because they were able to keep that perspective that they were being persecuted. They were suffering for the sake of the name of the Lord, which is always going to be preferable. Most of the time, however, we suffer because of our own decision making. We suffer as a result of poor decisions that we make. Now, obviously, that's not the same as being thrown in a dungeon for the sake of the name of Jesus. But yet, even through this, too, we can learn and we can come to more knowledge and understanding of God. Oftentimes, we can't perceive the actual nature of sin because it's cloaked in, it's so well camouflaged by this society in lies until we suffer from the results of sin, from taking in, from believing some of those lies. And when we suffer from the results of those, then we can better understand that that is a lie. As society runs around and says, this is what everybody should be doing, we come to understand that, no, it's not. And then in a direct way, even in our sin, even in our failings in this way, we suffer for the sake of the name of Jesus, for the sake of truth, because we come closer to it, if that makes sense. We come closer to the truth even when we suffer as a result of our sin and our shortcomings and our failings, because in that suffering from our sins and our shortcomings and our failings, we realize the true nature of sin. Even as society lies and promotes and claims that it's something that it is not, we understand. We understand the destructive nature of it. And this, even in and of itself, draws us closer to a greater knowledge and a closer understanding of the Lord. I think of the process of forging steel. So if you're forging a sword, you know how that works. They heat it, beat on it, and then stick it in the cold water, and then repeat the cycle over and over. And this hardens the steel. This hardens the edge of that sword. And that's how we grow in faith. That's how suffering works. We go through these cycles, and we learn, and we get hardened, and we get forged. This is part of the meaning of life. This is part of this process, which we gain experience points, which we gain spiritual maturity, is by going through these cycles. We're being forged. We suffer and we see things and we learn things. Again, even from our mistakes, even from our actual, we sin and we screw up and we suffer as a result of that. Even in those things, are we being forged? That's why I say there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You just have to keep seeking the Lord and keep moving forward. You cannot stop. I always, when I hear of people who are so despondent and so lost that they consider killing themselves, they just don't see a way out. And I always say, I can 100% guarantee you things will change. You can't see it, but 100%. The only way that things in your life won't change is if you stop living it. If you give up to the point of killing yourself, for instance, then you will stop right there at that point in your life. That's as far as you'll get. You'll never move beyond it because you've quit. You've literally quit moving forward. You've thrown your hands up and you've given up. Now, a person, obviously, they get caught up in that type of scenario, that type of mental state, that place to where they just can't see out of it, that spiral. They're in a spiral, and everything they look at, they're looking inward, and they can't see a way out. They say, I want to change. I want to get out of this situation, this dead-end situation in my life, and I just can't see. I don't see a way out. No matter what I do, I don't see anything changing, and it will. It doesn't matter whether you can see it or not. It will, as long as you keep moving forward. Every day moves you forward. Every day moves you closer. Every day that you're alive moves you closer to a day that something different is going to happen. If you live, look, I can promise you, if you live long enough, something different is going to happen at one point, at one day in your life. You are not going to live the same day over and over and over again. Now, it may seem that way. Again, when people get caught in the spiral, and I realize this probably doesn't apply to most of you, but it applies to some people. People get in a position to where they're caught in a spiral. Instead of moving through the tunnel, they're caught like in a whirlpool being sucked down, and it doesn't matter where they look. They don't see a way out, and they say, I just don't see. Things can't get any better, and they don't see any hope, and they just want the suffering to end. As I'm so tired, I just can't suffer like this anymore. I just can't. I'd rather be dead and end the suffering. But that's where you stop moving. That's where your life ends, in suffering. As long as you keep, if you live enough days, something different is going to happen. You're going to see something different. Something will change. I've lived a lot of days, it seems to me, on some level. And then in other ways, it seems like this life has been really short. But I've lived a lot of days, and I've been in a lot of different points in my life, and things will be different. My life today is so completely different than what my life was, say, 5-10 years ago. It is so incredibly at a different point, it's almost unrecognizable. You're going, you know, and much less if you went back 20 or 30 years ago. My life is in a completely different point. If you went to me 30 years ago and said, you know, in the year 2024, this is the kind of life you're going to be living, I would have been like, what? How am I going to wind up there? It would have just seemed incomprehensible to me that my life would wind up where it's at now. Every day moves you closer to something else. Every day moves you closer to new experiences. It can, yes, that means it can be moving you closer to a new round of suffering. Again, we're being forged like steel. The suffering isn't for nothing. As long as we keep our eyes on the Lord and keep moving forward in God, we will gain knowledge, we will gain wisdom and experience. If you run into somebody and they have some age on them and they have wisdom and you say, that is a wise guy, that is a wise man. He's an elder, you know, the way the elders used to be respected. You say, that's a wise man. He has knowledge and experience, and you can go and you can learn from this man, and you admire this man. How do you think he got that? He wasn't born with it. Most of the time, he probably got that by suffering, you know, by doing things the wrong way. He'll tell you, don't do this. It'll have a bad outcome. You should do this other thing, and obviously, you'll do well to listen. Learn the lessons that he has learned. Let him tell you what he has learned, and you can bypass some of that and pick up that knowledge and gain that knowledge and wisdom and understanding. But that man gained that knowledge and wisdom, understanding through suffering, through making the wrong decisions oftentimes. It's a great evil. It's a great travesty when a man has his life cut short, because his opportunity to gain these perspectives, to gain the wisdom and understanding that comes when you get more years behind you than years in front of you. One of the silly lies of this world is how we talked earlier about how this society promotes and puts youth up on a pedestal, praises youth as this thing to reach and grasp for. I always find one of the silliest things when you see older people who can't let go of their youth, it's a trait that we often mock among the baby boomers, is this inability to just age gracefully, to accept that this is their stage of life. Instead, you wind up with these old people that go around and try to act like, you know, 70's the new 30 or whatever the hell. And it's just so incredibly silly. Wisdom and understanding should come with age. It's a shame when a man has his life cut short because he's cut off from that ability to learn, to grow in knowledge of the Lord, and to gain wisdom and understanding that comes with getting more years behind you than years in front of you. We often beat ourselves up over our mistakes and our sins. We all do it. But the reality is, this too is a part of the learning and growing experience. This is once again highlights the amazing blessing that we have to be under grace in Jesus Christ, because that means we can keep moving forward even through these things, even through the suffering which accompanies sins and mistakes. Even as a man ages and gains wisdom and understanding, with that wisdom and understanding, it comes along with the notion, the understanding that you never stop learning. Again, it is a tragedy and is a great evil under the sun when a man has his life cut short before he can gain that perspective. It's a perspective you can't have with youth. It's not possible. When you're a young man, you'll hear people say, you've got your whole life ahead of you. You know, people say that to a young person. You've got your whole life ahead of you. Of course, if a young person is in the middle of suffering, much less if they're in the middle of that whirlpool, that spiraling place to where they can't see outside of what they're suffering through right now. They can't see outside. They don't see a way out. They think this is going to be their life from here on. I hear of young people, teenagers in high school, and they kill themselves because they're being bullied on Facebook or some shit. And it's so crazy. But you see, they don't have that perspective. They're caught in that whirlpool and they think, my whole life is going to be bullied on Facebook. Well, for someone my age, that's obviously stupid. But for them, that's all they can see. They're caught in the whirlpool. And then somebody will come along and think they're going to help them and say, look, don't be despondent. You've got your whole life ahead of you. Never realizing what an awful statement that is to somebody who can't see. They don't have that perspective. All they can see is this whirlpool of despair that they're caught in. Somebody's saying, you've got years of this despair to look forward to. You've got your whole life ahead of you. You know, don't worry about it. You've got your whole, don't be like that. You've got your whole life ahead of you. People will say this and not understand where that person is. They're in a spot where all they can see is more suffering coming down the road. What's going to happen? What bad thing is going to happen tomorrow? What depressing thing is going to, what am I going to lose tomorrow? What injustice am I going to face tomorrow? What horrible thing am I going to face tomorrow? And you're telling me, oh, you got more of this to look forward to. You've got your whole life to look forward to. That's not exactly an encouraging statement to somebody who's in that whirlpool of despair. Instead, keep moving forward. A more appropriate thing would be keep walking forward. There's going to be a day you're going to see something different. It doesn't matter whether or not you see it coming. I can assure you 100% promise you a certainty in this life. The more days you live, you are going to see something different. Things will change. But you've got to keep moving forward. Now, we tell young people, you've got your whole life ahead of you. And a young person, again, it's such an evil when a young person gets their life cut short, whether it's an accident or they're drafted into a war and they're killed, or they get caught in the whirlpool of despondence and don't see a way out and stop their own lives in that terrible, despondent, depressing, suffering state instead of moving out of it, which they would have had they kept moving forward. It's a great tragedy. A young person, you have your whole life, and that's what they see. Even a person that's not in, you know, the whirlpool of despondency and depression, they look forward, and that's their perspective. You know, they look forward, and all they can think about, say, they're in a good place, and they look forward, and all the things they might do, all the things they might accomplish, the life they're maybe going to live, you know, all sorts of things to look forward to. As you age out and you gain the wisdom and perspective of experience of different forms of suffering you've gone through, you reach a point to where you're looking forward, as we always are looking forward, and you look forward and all you see is death. At my stage in life, I look forward, and don't get me wrong, there's things I want to do. I'm not saying this in a depressing manner, because this ultimately is what brings us to wisdom. as you get up in years. I mean, I look forward, and yes, there's things I hope to do still and experience in this life, but death is ever nearer. When you're in your late 50s, death's a lot closer than when you're in your late 20s. Or at least that's the way we perceive it, always on the assumption that we're going to live a average lifespan. As you age, you look forward, and more often you see yourself moving closer to death. And this brings much wisdom, because now you understand when you're looking at death, you are looking at the day of the Lord. You see death, and this gives you this perspective. When you're young and you look forward, you're thinking you're going to experience lots of things, you're going to do lots of things, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, you have a chance to correct those mistakes, you're going to learn, you're going to thrive. But as you age and death draws closer, then you understand, I don't have a lot of time to be messing around here. I don't got a lot of time to waste. Death is approaching. We always want to divert our eyes from death. But the knowledge and looking at it, looking death right in the eye, this too brings wisdom and understanding. It brings perspective. We understand when you have age and you have that perspective, you understand the fleeting nature of this world's pleasures. You look at people who hoard money and they live for money, and that's all they can think about is money, 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 and what kind of things they have. When you're looking at death and it's not that far off, that really gives you the perspective of how silly that mindset is, how silly that perspective is. I mean, as a side note, kind of a side note on that topic, I always find it amazing among Christian believers, and a lot of times, I suppose this will be a lot of times maybe in evangelical and the Protestants or whatever, but, you know, there'll be this obsession, you know, about the day of the Lord. Am I going to see the day of the Lord? Is Jesus going to come in my lifetime? And he will on that day. When you look at that, we divert our eyes. We don't want to look at death. We don't want to think about it. We're afraid of it. That's way off somewhere. We're not even going to consider it. But then at the same time, these people will go around and talk about the day of the Lord, and I can't wait to see Jesus, and when the day when Jesus appears. But you can look at that day on the day of death. When you look at death, you are literally looking at the guaranteed day of the Lord for you. Maybe not for this world, but for you, it is the guaranteed day of the Lord. When you step out of this temporal realm and step into the eternal, to where time does not exist, you will be stepping into, when you are birthed out of this life, you're going to be at the day of the Lord. And yet these same people who obsess over or talk about it and prattle on about, I can't wait to see Jesus and I can't wait to see the day of the Lord, when it comes to the topic of death, they will quickly avert their eyes. They will want to change the conversation. They don't want to think about that. That's going to be way off somewhere. That's scary. But that is the day of the Lord, and you will see it. You look at death, you are looking at the day of the Lord. That is the day. The day you pass out of this life is the day you will stand before the Lord and look at yourself without, as you are, the good, the bad, the ugly, the things you did right, the things you did wrong. You'll see your sins. There won't be any justification. You won't have any excuses. You just have to see things in the light of the absolute truth of Jesus Christ. No, oh, but I have an extenuating circumstance for that. Everything for what it is, laid bare. This is the day of the Lord. And yet people will prattle on in ignorance about how they're so ready. I'm ready for the day of the Lord. Let me tell you, I'm ready for Jesus to come today. No, you're not. More than likely, no, you're not. Just saying that you think you're ready today is pretty much a dead giveaway that no, actually, you're not. As we get that understanding, as we draw, as we age and gain wisdom, and as you look forward, you're seeing fewer and fewer things of this world that you're wanting to experience, that you're wanting to do. You're seeing fewer of those things, and you see that day of death drawing closer. This gives you a greater perspective. This gives you a much greater perspective of where you're at. You kind of, to me, it lights a fire of urgency. It lights a fire of urgency of what am I doing with my time? when I had my first cancer diagnosis, and I had no idea. It's like, you know, you hear these terms and they're talking about where you're at, and this is a serious, you know, what you've got and what it could mean. And you start entertaining ideas like, well, what if I'm going to be dead in 6 months? Well, what is that going to mean? When you get a knock on the door, and it very well could be death knocking much closer than you thought it was, you suddenly start thinking, well, you know, when you have to start thinking of things in the context of perhaps months instead of years, much less decades, what if I'm going to be dead in 6 months? What if next year at this time, I'm not going to be here? What does that mean? Because it means all those things, you just narrowed that. Death just came a lot closer. And all those things you were kind of thinking about you wanted to do in this world, now those are out the window. And you got to think, well, okay, what do I need to rush around and get done for the, you know, in growing in the Lord here before I meet the day of the Lord? This is all a part of the natural progression of our lives. Young people are filled with the passions of youth, and they have the perspective of youthful people. And this is a normal part. It should be progressed. And as you progress and go through the things and keep your mind, your heart set upon the Lord, and you grow and you gain and you suffer and you gain wisdom and understanding. And then you get into older age and you start aging out. And now you've got all of your accumulated wisdom and understanding. And then you get closer perspective of death, which is kind of like an accelerant to your wisdom and understanding, because now you have a greater perspective of how close to the day of the Lord you are. We don't know where it is written. No one knows. We don't know the day of the Lord. Likewise, we don't know the day of our death, which will be for every one of us the day of the Lord from our personal perspective. We don't know the day of the Lord. We don't know which day. Even if the doctor, even if you have a serious illness and a terminal illness, and they say you've got, you know, 6 months to live, but you don't know what actual day. We've all seen people that get a diagnosis in their life like that, and they may only live 4 weeks. Sometimes they'll live a year and a half, contrary to what the doctor's dire predictions were, because nobody actually knows what that day, when that day. Nobody knows the day of the Lord, but you will see it. It's a 100% guarantee. And as we get this wisdom and perspective and understanding, which is accumulated through years of suffering, as we age out and we get a closer perspective on death, that gives us the context of where we're at now in our lives. We didn't have that context when we were 20, and you're not going to. You're just not. You're at a different stage in your life, and you have to work through those stages. But if you're able to work through these stages, keep moving forward, never stop seeking Jesus, never stop seeking understanding the Lord, I 100% guarantee you will grow in wisdom, you will grow in understanding, and as you age out, you're going to get a different perspective, because you naturally will do so, because you are growing closer to death. I feel like I need to add a footnote here. I'd have to go back and look, but it was some time ago. It was quite a few, 4 or 5 weeks ago, maybe. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson on his Orthodox Nationalist show did a very excellent show on death. And if what we're talking about here intrigues you and you haven't listened to that, I encourage you to do so. There's some very good points made in that. To wrap up. Wisdom and understanding come through suffering. And we gain wisdom and understanding in other ways, but most of the time, most of the wisdom and true understanding that we gain in life is like that steel being, like that sword being forged. It's the cycle of heating and beating and cooling and start all over again. And that is more or less how we are forged, how we're forged spiritually. And everybody goes through this. Those that do not seek the Lord, those that reject the grace of God, they suffer for nothing. I mean, they're not gaining anything. This is a true tragedy. They're going through suffering too, and all for naught. There's no purpose, because there's no direction for them. They're not seeing things in the context of growing in the Lord. They're just suffering for suffering's sake. And sure, I'm sure this life seems quite pointless for that person. Gain your wisdom and your understanding, and you keep moving forward. If you keep moving forward, you will move out of the suffering. You will get the other stages where you get a break from that. It may not seem like it, but you will. If you're in the whirlpool of despondence and you don't see a way out, keep moving forward in the Lord. Each day that goes by gets you a day closer to getting out of it, and you will. You're not going to stay in where you're at for the rest of your life. That's not going to happen. 100%, you can take my word for it, 100% guarantee you, a door will be opened, something will happen. Keep looking to the Lord. Keep moving forward. This is part of the trial. This is what it means to be tested. Pass through the test, through the trials, pass through the water of what we're going through. And this, like, this is all the point. And ultimately, we will see the day of the Lord. You will see Jesus. It is coming. And this perspective will bring us to the greatest understanding, to the most mature, higher levels of understanding, as we're able to finally look at death and face death and take that perspective and also apply that to our own growth and understanding all the way up. I'm a believer that we are learning. We're going through gaining understanding of the Lord through suffering all the way up to that moment till we take our last breath and we're birthed out of this life. We face that moment, that last minute of life, even a trial, even up to that point. And that's how life works. We never stop growing. We never stop understanding. A true wise man will tell you he doesn't know it all. And he himself is continuing to grow and to learn, to gain understanding. We'll wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. The Christian specific segment is the most important part for me. This is the most important, roughly 30 minutes or so that I do. Here at Radio Alvin, and you know, for me, this is the most important thing. I hope you got something out. I hope you enjoyed the whole show. Obviously, I do hope you enjoyed the whole show. I appreciate y'all stopping by, and I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.